Okay, I mean, if anybody wants to move closer, then do feel free, but, okay. I don't know whether we've got a lot of people because people can't be bothered to move, or just we're incredibly popular, but, you know. Okay, nice to see everybody. So we're slightly ahead of schedule, which is good. Audrey's looking quizzical, but I'll press on anyway. So
have we got a roving microphone with
you? I may have one at the back. All right, so welcome to this workshop, which is about how we prioritised investment in public right-of-way in County Durham, and lessons that can be learned or not, as the case might be. My name's Jeff Hughes, and I'm the chair of the County Durham Local Access Forum, and that's our little pop-up banner over there. I'm joined by Audrey Christie, who's the Rights of Way Manager for Durham County Council, and Jim Phillips, who's the Director of Ethos Environmental Planning, both of whom you'll hear from rather than hearing much from me. So we've got until 12:30, as Liz Newton said. I just wonder, because I'm curious to know who everybody is, whether people could just say very quickly who they are and where they're from. So starting with Richard Toon, so we just go along the rows.
Lancashire Local Access Forum.
Okay, thank you.
Chris Badley, Mid-Lincolnshire Access Forum.
Harry Fitzgerald, Local Access Forum.
Facilitator.
I work for the National
Park. Oh, right, okay, we'll let you off.
Dave Robertson, Lake District Municipal Park Forum.
John Gilbertson, Disabled Rounders.
Mark West, British Wall Society, and Shropshire Local Access.
Ben Solomon, North Lincolnshire.
Okay, thanks for that. It's just useful to know who we all are. So we'll press on. The format for the workshop is that it'll be very short presentations from Audrey and Jim, 10, 15 minutes max. And then it's kind of over to you to, not to perhaps give us a hard time, but to check and challenge perhaps what we've said, but also to have a discussion around some of the issues that arise from what we say. Then we'll try and sum up any sort of learning points or points that might need to be fed back to the plenary session at the end. Just one or two key facts about, and they are just one or two key facts about County Durham. County Durham is the sixth largest local authority in the country by area, something like 859 square miles. It's the seventh largest by population in terms of local authorities, and we've got 2,200 miles of paths. So, as you can imagine, with 2,200 miles of paths, when we came to produce the first right-of-way improvement plan, we as the Local Access Forum were sort of saying, well, you know, there's meagre resources, how do we spread the jam? At the moment, it seemed to be spread very thinly, and you couldn't really demonstrate that that by investing in right-of-way, we were making a difference. So we came up with this bright idea, which has been taken forward over subsequent years, since 2007, where we suggested that there ought to be some more sophisticated mechanism than perhaps existed previously about how to get best value from investment in the network. And that's it in a nutshell. So I'm not the expert in terms of how we did it and what's happened in since 2007, but I'll hand over first to Audrey Christie, who'll begin the process of explaining what we've done. So, over to you.
I'm going to stay sat down, actually. And is this... Let's just... Right, that works. We've got... Get this to work. Mike, I need to speak, don't I? Okay. Thank you, Jeff. And I'm delighted that we're here, really, to be able to sort of tell you a bit about what we've done and also get ideas from you as to how we might have done it differently or how we can develop it further. And I think it's particularly pertinent to today because it's a project we've done which came out from our LAF and has been carried through our ROIPs. We're on our third ROIP. The third one came out earlier this year, but we've very firmly put this access prioritisation project idea within all our rights of way improvement plans. So it's part of our furniture in County Durham. Well, it is for the time being. Just to tell you how we're going to just run the presentation side of this workshop, which me and Jim are going to do together. The few bullet points of how we'll go through things. First of all, what we wanted from this approach to managing our rights of way, what information we wanted looked at to get us to finding out the sort of results we were looking at finding, a bit of the context and the history of it. Jim will talk us through how the studies were actually conducted, and then I want you to sort of appreciate how much we've achieved and how much our path networks have actually benefited from the whole project. So, first of all, I will give you a definition of access prioritisation, which is a study of a local path network, including the views of the people who use it and manage it, to produce a prioritised schedule of proposed path improvements. Okay, or more simply, a strategic approach to looking at managing local paths. Okay, the first thing, as the beleaguered rights of way officer, and anybody who's involved in rights of way or path management, is we all know that the path networks of our nation are underfunded and the nation will never be willing to spend the amount of money that we need to put into them. And everybody wants their favourite path sorted out, okay? Everybody who comes to us and rings us up is really only concerned about the issue that is bothering them. They're not concerned about the fact that County Durham's got 2,200 miles of paths. That's only paths that are recorded on the definitive map, not the rest of it, which is probably double that length again. So decisions have to be made. You can't do everything, and you never will be able to do everything, okay? And as rights of way officers, we probably come with our own sort of, everyone talks about unconscious bias these days, don't they? We come with that as well. So sometimes maybe we aren't always the most objective people. If someone shouts at us and is rude to us, we're probably inclined not to be very helpful to them. Whereas if someone works collaboratively and is nice to us, we're more likely to be helpful. I think that's a basic human sort of response to people. But just to look at what we wanted from the approach, the sort of very simplistically is the creation of a prioritised work programme for the access and rights of way network. So it's actually having this objective look at a whole network locally and what's most important and what's least important and have it in a prioritised sort of shopping list, as it were. On the right, you probably can't see it, but that's my current work programme for Bishop Auckland, which is one of the areas that Jim and his team looked at for us last year. Okay, so I've got works that we've identified funding for in green, and the works that are outstanding are in grey, which I'm currently trying to see if I can lobby for funding. Okay, so the second thing is our project and its report is our evidence base for using as a lever to get additional funding into our rights of way network. Okay, I've just thrown in a snip of the funding, a bit from the application form for a County Durham members neighbourhood budget. All our county councillors get £25,000 a year, one of their budgets, in which they can spend that money, should be capital money, and they ask about need. It says, tell us about the needs the people who will use your project have, explain how you know there is a need, show how your project will meet the need you have identified. Need could be demonstrated by meetings, including those interested in your project, surveys, research, and statistics. So our access prioritisation is hitting all this, being able to give evidence of need, which if any of you have filled in any funding bids, you'll know that that's a big thing. You know, you can't just say, oh, because we think it's a nice idea. You need to give them a bit more meat to the bones, as it were, which is what this project gets to. Okay, so when we first started looking at what information do we want that what information needs to be fed into a project which is going to basically pull out the priorities for a certain area. Three main things. One is asking people, the people who use the network and those that manage it, first thing. Second thing is actually getting out there and looking at the whole thing. What surveys, what condition is it in, what structures has it got on it, how well signed is it, the whole sort of jamboree. And then the third thing is to look at, you do a desktop analysis, looking at, you know, where paths are in relation to services, to local schools, to population catchment areas. But Jim will talk a little bit more about this in a moment, because it's really to do with how he actually and his team managed to get that information from people. Okay, so but that's what we wanted, taking into account a whole sort of approach that we knew that we as Rights of Way officers would not be able to manage to do it because of time constraints, so we commissioned consultants to do this work for us. Okay, I think I'm probably going to repeat a little bit of what Jeff has said earlier, but the project was the brainchild of our local access forum. One wintry evening, sat in County Hall in a meeting room, as he said, it was a way of having a structured approach to how we might manage our network, rather than spreading ourselves thinly everywhere and not managing to actually achieve anything. And since that time, we've had it in our Rights of Way improvement plans. I brought the most recent one and the previous one, but it's in there where I've put a post-it note in. Our ROIP has a number of policies and actions, and then we have projects that will then deliver those actions, which are therefore delivering the policies. So we've made sure that access prioritisation is a part of our ROIP, and it is one of the things that's been delivered. Okay, so we've done three studies in County Durham over the period from the winter of 2009-10, which Jim will always remind me was probably the coldest winter we've had for decades, and we've covered over the three phases, seven of the 12 biggest settlements in the county. Okay, the first phase we piggybacked on what was flavour of the month at that time, something called housing growth points, which was a plan, very much a sort of plan-led development that certain sites in the county were going to have huge housing developments. Okay, so we managed to go and knock on the door of the folks who were managing that and get some money to fund our study, which cost £27,000. So we looked at the Easington-Peterlee area of the county and Spennymoor, which are, Peterlee is one of the biggest settlements in the county, and Spennymoor's a sort of, I think, about 10 to 15,000 people in it. Okay, so we were focusing on where there was going to be proposed new development, and with a view to being able to lobby the developers to get money, okay, from their developments and Section 106 agreements. In the end, housing growth points fell off the agenda. It was no longer fashionable and disappeared. However, it didn't matter because we got some money from them to study our networks. Phase two, we hit a couple of Durham City and Seaham. Okay, and we funded that. We have in Durham, which I think is probably notable, we have a sustainable travel officer who's led on getting funding. But she managed to get funding from the Transport and Asset Management Plan. So it was a some colleagues in Strategic Highways who had a budget that they didn't spend, which was designed for managing the sort of the traffic assets, which could be anything from your street lights to your traffic lights. And we said, hang on, our rights of way network is also an asset. That's part of this bigger picture. So they funded our phase two of the project. And then phase three, which is what has been happening over the last year, is in an area to the south of the county, Bishop Auckland, Shildon and Acliff, okay? Acliff's the second largest town in our county, but we had local strategic transport fund money, I think £2 million, with a big, big project, which was all to do with getting people walking more, actually quite a lot of work done one-to-one, behavioural change with people, trying to get people more aware of their travel, what modes they use for travel, to get more people walking, cycling, okay? So that's been the most recent study, which actually has been the biggest study of those three towns, which all are next to each other, okay? Which I'm currently working on to try and do some delivery of it, okay? So what's been delivered as a result of the studies? So for the phase one and phase two, we spent £53,000 on, if I'm correct, on the investing in the study. Because we had this lovely evidence base, we have managed to deliver £295,000 worth of capital path improvements, okay, in those areas. So we've five times or six times managed to leave it in additional money. I see it's a bit like doing an advertising campaign. You do an advertising campaign and you increase your returns that you get back. Okay, so we've managed to do a lot of work. A couple of photos, which are just very typical path improvements, a boggy, wet area, and then a path that then is beautifully surfaced for people to walk over. So improving paths. The current one we're doing, we've spent £50,000 on it. We've so far got £50,000 to spend on it, but we're only at the beginning of that journey for us to get more money. So I would hope we will get three, four, five times that amount eventually to do path improvements in the most recent area. Okay, Jeff's telling me I've run out of time, and I'm happy to pass it over to Jim.
Thank you.
Do you want me to do that for you?
No, it's fine. I can manage. Basically, we delivered the project on behalf of the council and the LAF. I'll keep it relatively brief what we did. It was essentially three key parts to it, which was asking people, so consultation, a series of on-site assessments, and then a desktop assessment. In terms of consultation, we did various stakeholder workshops with people like yourselves. A lot of on-site user consultation where our team stood out and spoke to people, different places, different times, etc. And we also put a load of leaflets out in different places on the network where people could pick up a leaflet and then go online, look at the network and fill in issues, opportunities, etc. And all three of those sort of mixture of techniques work quite well in terms of getting a variety of feedback. So that was very useful in building up the evidence base. In terms of the audits, this process has sort of developed through the three phases of the project. In this most recent phase, we developed a new sort of system, which is quite innovative, using ArcView and an online recording of information. I've got it actually on this iPad here. So before, when you used to go out and do audits for rights of way and things, you'd need a camera, you'd need a laptop, some sort of pad to enter things, and it was all a bit complex and expensive, some of this kit. Now you can do it on a £200 iPad and it can be hosted online. So in terms of an aspiration for us to perhaps get volunteers and things involved, this is much more accessible than perhaps it was in the past. Basically, this is the most recent project. The access network was captured onto the mapping base, and we went around all of those various paths, recording photos. So it allows you to put points on the map, take a photo, click on here. So it gives you quite a good asset database as well. And something very practical you can do, and at the same time recording any issues, any problem areas, any opportunities with the photographic evidence, and being able to make notes about each path on the on site as well. So the actual field audit was then backed up with a desktop assessment. So we wanted to take it a step further than just looking at issues on the site and problems, to actually look at it a bit more wider, to give it the strength of evidence to justify investment. And we came up with a series of criteria which we developed through a series of workshop with the LAF and other stakeholders, and these are the sorts of criteria people felt were important. So its existing condition, the level of use, opportunities for improvement, its connectivity to communities, to other footpaths, to open spaces, etc., access to open spaces, and then evidence of local need, which I mentioned in that first point, which is what people were telling us. We also looked at some sort of technical things to sort of tick some of the boxes in terms of funding, so things like income deprivation, health and BMI scores, proximity to allocated sites, so i.e. housing sites, do they provide opportunity for securing funding, and this particular project is quite a big sort of tourism aspect as well. So all those things fed into this overall assessment, and it basically gave every path a score. So there's the network, and it was a simple ranking system. The most prioritised paths were ranked an A, and they were mapped and allocated a score, and then we had B and C paths as well. So it came up with a system, very simple, so that Audrey and her team could look at, right, where are the A paths, where are the B, where are the C priorities, and that then helps them drive looking for funding. That's me. Who's doing the overview?
So just to sort of round it up, really, the first point is that we've got a valuable and robust tool for assessing the path network and identifying priorities for improvement. Getting a very scientific sort of assessment of paths is sort of the impossible task, but this is as good as it gets, really. And so far, nobody's argued with us about it. We've tended to have blinded them with, wow, that's really good, and accepted that it's a sort of robust measure of how that we've done it. It's all been done properly, and you know, it's credible, which it is. Okay, so and it's not just useful for getting funding, it's also useful for us just managing the general network when you're there, and in a way to having to be a bit of an arbitrator with people that, oh, I want this path sorted out, and why are you not doing this? And you say, well, actually, it's not a priority within your community. Sorry, that sounds terrible, doesn't it? But you know, those kind of bad news you have to tell people, why you, the council isn't going to spend money on a particular path. Okay, so I think I've talked about it being getting the money, which I, at the moment, is my key thing, because I'm busy trying to do that. Okay, the delivery of the projects clearly far exceeds the value of the projects, far exceeds what we've spent on it, the investment we've put into it. But it was getting the original investment that I think is the challenge of convincing people that you want some money to do some research, because everyone wants to be out there delivering things straight away. Okay. The method can be weighted to suit the circumstances, okay? Our studies in Durham so far have been focused on urban areas where there's new proposed development, and in a climate where we know that our funding comes from LTP. And in County Durham, the LTP funding, the sort of headlines are utilitarian usage of paths. So the paths that get people to school, to work, to meaning to places that they need to get to for economic activity are the things that are prioritised. So we've, hence, I know Jim's mentioned a bit about that, you know, we've put some things in, like the proximity to proposed new developments. If there was funding, say, you know, for looking at sort of economic development, the sort of indexes of multiple deprivation, if you were knowing you wanted to get your funding from a health source, your BMI indexes you might weight your criteria more on certain factors. So you can tailor it to what you're after, really. What we've done is the Jim's team developed a matrix where we fed all the scores in, and then it came out with a final score. We've actually used that methodology for other things. So we actually use it for the walking and cycling schemes for LTP are all fed into a matrix, which is a desktop analysis, admittedly, but we've used it. I've used it when we've been assessing all our flood damaged paths and which paths have got priority over other paths. So we've used it. So, you know, he's been paid to develop something, but we've actually then taken it as a tool that we've used for other purposes. I've been challenged a little bit by some of the priorities that people have come up with, people wanting dog bins and sort of things that you're thinking, well, you've got paths out there that are really rubbish, but actually you've put a path that I think, as the Rights of Way officer, is okay, high up on the list. We feel we have to respect that, okay? I was sat at a meeting with a couple of councillors last week where I was there with my colleague to lobby them for money. One of them, very keen on this idea that sort of the National Railway Museum in Shildon, and there's the 200th anniversary of the first railway line, the Stockton to Darlington Railway, opened 200 years ago in 10 years' time, and can't we put money into these paths? And I had the other councillor saying, no, we're looking at this report that's come out now. This is what people in this community want. It's not necessarily something that's bigger. It's what people have themselves have said is their priority. And those may not necessarily be what we think is a priority. So you will be challenged as to what you think is most important, okay? One of the things that I may come up in discussion, and it's always troubling, is this cracking the whole network. We have the Rights of Way network, but we have loads of other paths that people use. In Newton Aycliffe, which is a new town, on our priority list, I think 2 out of the top 10 are recorded public rights of way. The rest cross unknown people's land, they cross the town council's land. So it does then challenge you with other issues that, you know, we're kind of generally under pressure to spend money on the stuff that the council's responsible for. But, you know, you can spend money on other paths, but it then does create sort of other issues that you hadn't quite been anticipating. Our project has got us quite a high profile within some of our sort of management within our authority and within transport where we sit. So I think we've got to the point where it's well respected and is quite a handy way of getting the LTP budget spent with a good evidence base. You know, so we are. I think we've managed to get ourselves a sort of little foot in the door to say this is a good thing that levers money in and goes a long way to sort of trying to make order out of that mass of paths out there, which is, you know, getting your head around it sometimes is quite hard. It gives us a nice work program to work on.
Okay, thank you. It's now kind of over to you. I should say, before we do that, we have got a summary of what these guys have spoken about. I think Audrey's got copies of that, which we'll hand out at the end, or, well, perhaps just hand them round now. This is the discussion session, and I've got on my notes, it said refer to flip chart. So I'll just refer to this flip chart that we don't have a flip chart. Anyway, not to worry. I was going to scribble on a flip chart, but we've got a facilitator anyway. So, kind of over to you, really. We've got 15 minutes or so. you've heard from the guys who've been doing it, you've heard from the point of view of the county council, and you've heard from the consultant. Do you think there's merit in our approach? And if you do, say, yeah, well done. If you think there are some issues with it, then by all means, ask away. Question over there, at the back. Jim can say a few words about the methodology that you've adopted. So,
yeah, I mean, basically, it was the surveyor's judgment, because we weren't going to attempt, you know, users number surveys, etc., etc. So it could only be an assessment of the level of use from the past, from the on-site audit, but also from speaking to people. So those two things together allowed us to make a judgment on a school. Some were obvious, you know, we knew they were very well used, we knew some were not very well used, and a lot sat in the middle. But the key thing was to perhaps draw out those ones which were really, you know, it's all about the resource within the available budget, really. So, yeah.
So, question at the front, Christopher.
Remembering that most of us here are not well. I'm extremely interested in where this money came from, the £295,000. You said most of it came from the local transport fund. I just want to know more about how this works, because we've always been told that the ROIC doesn't come with a budget. And now, I never occurred to me to even think, does the local transport plan come with a budget, because it's not something we've been concerned with.
Okay, so
The ROIC is now supposed to be incorporated within the LTP. Do all authorities have a designated budget for LTP, in which case we have a budget for ROIC, which is something that is contrary to what I had understood. And I'm interested to know how it works in other authorities.
Audrey first, and then if there are examples of how other authorities have got money for right away, then we'd be interested to hear from you guys as well. Audrey.
Yeah, we haven't got a ROIC budget at all. Okay, we've got the money to the officer and post and the printing costs, which they try and not let us print very many of them at all.
Yeah.
What we've got is we've got an officer, we've got a person, which I think is the key issue here, who's a sustainable travel officer, who used to be in our rights of waiting, who also, as part of her job, is writing the ROIC. So she has managed to leave the money, the research and people, and then there is a heading under Candy Dunn's LTP, walking and cycling. So the authorities made a commitment to spend the money on walking and cycling.
I was joking.
So
we'll manage.
So has a specific, fairly large budget item.
Yes.
Which is to implement the LTP.
There is a, yes. And in Canterbury, I think there's something like 2 or 3 million spent on walking and cycling.
ROIC is incorporated in the LTP, then logically some of that LTP budget.
Yes.
No, I wouldn't
say
it would have to be part of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be part of it.
Okay. Yeah. Can I ask then how other local authorities fund their right of way improvement plans? Is there any examples of innovative approaches funding for right of way? And can I perhaps bounce it back at you to ask you how you prioritise? Do you prioritise on the basis of who shouts loudest, or?
Where we've got a lovely change for right rights of way, and we've got the local land. And it's taken us 5 years to get this, and now we've got an appeal that's going to have to go to the public inquiry, which of course wasn't paid for by the local authority, but the LAP are pushing it. So it's money at the end of the day.
Yeah. So I'd like to go back to my original question: is have we got it right? Is our approach a good one to adopt, or are people going to say, "Well, I wouldn't do it that way"? Sorry, colleague at the back, and then one here. Sorry, I'm not hearing that awfully well. Audrey, did you get the gist of that?
That is picking up quite big issues that need
HS2 being.
All right, okay. We don't have HS2 over here. No, I might get it in Leeds eventually, but. Okay. Sorry, there was a colleague here, and then Catriona. Well, Audrey, just want to come back on that in terms of how you balance between investment in the areas that have been the subject of this prioritisation exercise and other parts of the county. I think, is that your point?
That's
probably, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you just want to come back on that one?
Yeah. Well, it's a good point, and I suppose we've taken a decision, for right or wrong, to focus on certain areas where initially there was going to be a lot of development, so a load more people out there wanting to use paths, so that on the basis that the current network's not going to be good enough for them. So we have, I suppose we've focused on certain areas, the sort of 2K zone, outside urban areas, knowing that the LTP, which is the main funding stream that we can capture, it's going to hit the buttons on that. So we're chasing the funding.
Yeah.
I think in rural, it's more difficult for the rural to get the funding, because our problems that were being raised were paths that are all open. They just might not be very good. So it's not picking up the sort of rubbish paths that have got barbed wire across them, you know, because most of them in that vicinity are going to be.
Yeah.
Usable.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that we have prioritised, and you would kind of, we would kind of hope that we'd get around the county, you know, over a period of time. You can't do it all at once. What I would say from the local access forum point of view is that members love it because it's responding to the highest priorities of people who live in the particular settlements. And as Audrey said, it does have a high profile within the county council. The other point I would make is that it's not one size fits all. I want to talk to Jim at lunchtime. We've just been successful in securing funding for a landscape partnership in part of the county. And as part of that, we're obliged to do an access audit. So I'm going to be saying to them, because I happen to be chair that board, why not use this methodology to do the audit, as a result of which hopefully we'll get funding to improve access opportunities in that area, just as we've done in an area of Teesdale. We've prioritised certain routes in that area. So I accept your criticism, you know, that we could go back to the old approach, but I think from where we sit, we think this works. And the other thing that we discussed on the train on the way down is where we perhaps haven't been as successful as we would like is getting money from developers. So you can actually say, we've now got the evidence. This is where you need to invest your SIL money or your 106 money in approving these routes. Sorry, Catriona.
Two questions. How
Audrey, I'm going to have to defer to you on that.
I suppose you would deal with it as it happens, and dare I say, it's a fairly low risk of the worry. I suppose it's there all the time. It's always there, isn't it? You know, I've got a Section 138 notice sat on my desk, you know, which is a path that's been blocked for 50 years. You know, there's always that risk that people are going to serve those things on you, but actually it's quite a low risk, really. And then the bosses get worried about it if it's a Section 56 and they'll send you from somewhere. It's probably the reality. If you are going to repair it and not argue about it.
I think the purpose of the project is there's going to always be those cases, but the purpose of really is to stop members and others saying, I want this one done, I want that one done, and you've got a system to perhaps argue for or against those rather than less usual cases.
Colleague at the end here, and then
We don't have an enforcement budget, we have a revenue budget. I would seek to get all the money back if I do enforcement.
David, then Liz.
I was going to ask, one of the criteria that you flagged up was connectivity to the rest of the network.
Yes.
And the improvements you've talked about are very sort of practical on the ground improvements.
Yes.
Have you got any sort of wider strategic improvements in terms of better connecting grindways, for example, or better connecting footpaths? I actually worked for Lake District National Park Authority. Started taking a look at sort of right away improvements a few years ago. Our right away improvement plan suggested we had over 400 in the lakes, 280 were right aways, and that our network is quite badly connected. So that's where we were coming from in terms of strategic improvement, where it's not something whether you've got any better connectivity.
You're not the spin off of the aircons.
Well, just
very briefly, and one of the spin-offs from this was a project to, in one area, look at particular opportunities, connections for horse-riding and bridleways. So one thing that came out of this was a further study into working with landowners, with relevant, you know, horse groups, etc., looking at all that. So that
was another source, wasn't
it?
It was a very thorough,
actually,
at
the Heritage Code.
Okay.
There's spin-offs like that.
Okay, we've got about 2 minutes left, so I'll just ask Liz if she's got a question.
Basically, it was recorded and then shout. So,
yeah.
There's only certain paths went through.
And don't forget, we have to put this access prioritisation project in context. You know, Audrey's alluded to the rest of the right-of-way improvement plan. So it's not everything that Durham does. It's part of what Durham does, and it's been successful, in my view, in our view, of attracting funding to right-of-way that perhaps wouldn't otherwise have come our way. I'm going to try and draw it to a close, unless Audrey wants to have another go.
Well, I just wanted to add something. Was it Liz, to that comment, that one of the criteria that got weighted was potential for improvement. So a beautiful path that might be the best used path in a particular area, but because it's brilliant, actually wouldn't score highly. So actually what it is, it's ranking the potential for improvements. It's not ranking do you know what I mean? It's value to the community.
That would be a different
list there.
Yeah, and what, just again responding to Liz, I mean, what I'd like to do as part, you know, we meet on a regional level, is to prioritise some of those regional routes that we want to improve, because we know where the national cycle routes are and stuff like that, but there are other strategic routes that cross our boundaries, particularly for cycling and horse riding, that we need to get a better handle on, working with the other local authorities and the other LAFs in our region, which is kind of on our list of things to do. So we're kind of almost at lunch. I just wanted to make one or two very quick closing remarks. No, nobody said that what we've done is rubbish. So I'm taking that as a it's a good idea. We have got a valuable tool. I think we've learnt one or two points about having to be innovative, and particularly in drawing funding from LTP, local transport plan, and also other potential sources of funding. And I've referred to landscape partnerships. For example. So we do need to continue to look for other sources of funding. And I think, is there a workshop this afternoon about other sources of funding for right away? So maybe we'll get some more on that. We I've just referred to it, we need to think about the wider strategic issues, and it's not just about access prioritisation in isolation. That's very, very roughly trying to sum up some of the comments that have come back from you. So I hope you've enjoyed it. Inevitably, it's always a rush, but some people have finished ahead of us. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Okay, cheers.